Theological education should be affordable. Seminary students should not have to take out tens of thousands of dollars in student loans to train for the ministry. At Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary, our students pay a base of $75 per credit hour and a $375 per semester fee. For more information on how you can receive Informed Scholarship with Pastoral Heart, check out our website, cbtseminary.org.
Covenant Podcast exists to equip listeners with theological content from a 1689 Baptist perspective.
We pray you find this resource edifying, faithful to Scripture, and Christ-exalting. Now, let's get started. Welcome to the Covenant Podcast. Austin McCormick here, as usual, with my co-host, Jimmy Johnson. But today, we have the privilege of having Jason Montgomery on the podcast. So, welcome to the podcast, Jason.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and today we're going to be talking about Benjamin Bedham, or Bedamy. We'll perhaps allow him to tell us how he pronounces it. But before we begin to talk about Bedham, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, including your interest in Bedham?
Sure, I can. The interest that I found in Bedham began around 2014. And I was at a church associational meeting, and I was having lunch with a few guys around a table, and one of the points of conversation turned to doctoral studies, which I was soon to begin in 2014. And one of the guys at the table was Jim Renahan, and I would imagine you guys know Jim and his love for Baptist history. And as he was getting up from the table and walking away, he just casually turned back around and said to me, "Why don't you look at Bedham?" And I said, "Sure," pretty much thinking, "Who's Bedham?" And so yes, in answer to your previous question there, I would say Bedham, not Bedome, not Bedamy, but Bedham. But again, I've never met the guy, so I don't think he's going to mind how we say his name, but I do pronounce it Bedham. So that was my interest in Bedham himself. And once I began to look into him, as a pastor, I found a pastor and I never looked back. I know one of the things we're going to get to maybe later on are the things that I kind of take away from Bedham, things that I glean from him. And it's that affection for him as a pastor, as a fellow pastor, that really drew me to him, his desire for longevity in ministry, his commitment to this one flock for so many years. And so that was back in 2014. And prior to that, I've been pastoring since 1994. So I'm about the 28th year now. And the reform of myself and the reform of our congregation is probably what began to move me toward these kinds of subjects. Our church that I pastor, we started in 1998, and our church has gone through, you know, kind of a move from a very conservative Baptist church holding to expositional preaching, but probably more progressive dispensational in their theology back 20 plus years ago, moving through the process of adopting the confession. And then, like many of us that adopt the confession, a couple years after we adopt the confession as a church, we read the confession. And then we're like, oh, my goodness, that's really in there. So, you know, we adopt it in good faith and we try to do our due diligence before we do that. But we realize that we can't know everything about what's in the Reformed tradition. And we're continuing, just like the church is always reforming, so we're always reforming. And so probably from the years of about 2003 to 2012, 11 or so, our church went through a lot of shifts and some difficult times due to those reform shifts. And then since about 2011, 2012, the church has really kind of settled into an identity within the Second London family, if you will, our associational identifications and things such as that. And that kind of opened me up to a whole array of relationships with different people. Jim was one of those. And he has been very influential in my desire to study historical theology and Baptist history in particular, and others as well. Maybe some guys that you guys have had on the podcast, other men that you probably would know if I mention their names, but just brothers who have been very helpful to me along that way. And my church and poor family have been drugged through that as well. And so I am married, my wife of 30 plus years. I have 7 children, and you guys are about the age of my oldest. And so, you know, if I go into dad mode or something, you can stop me. But my youngest is 8, little girl, and then we have 5 wedged in between there. And so that's a little about me, a little bit about my connections with Bedham and the Reformed kind of trajectory of the last 20 plus years or so.
Amen. And thank you for introducing us and our audience to you and your interest in Bedham. Can you now give us a little bit of a biographical sketch of Benjamin Bedham, his life, ministry, and theology?
Sure. Bedham is an 18th century man. And when I say that, I mean that his life, for the most part, spans almost the whole of the 18th century. He's born in 1718, dies in 1795. And so his life hits a lot of different points along the spectrum of what happens in 18th century, particular Baptist life and just Christianity in general. He is born in a little town, just a beautiful little village known as Henley in Arden. It's up kind of in the upper part of the Midlands and a few miles away from Stratford-on-Avon, where we think of Shakespeare. And I got to visit this little town several years ago where they have his birthplace. The home he grew up in has now been recognized, and they have a nice little plaque on the side of the house there. And it's right by the Baptist Church. The Baptist Church that's there now is not the original Baptist Church from his time. It was built somewhere in the 19th century. But at the time, when he was born in Henley, his father, John Bedham, was the pastor of a church that met in like 3 different locations. The main church was down in Alchester, which was a few miles to the south of that. And Bedham lives there until he's a young boy, 7 or 8 or so, at which time his father is called to pastor the Pithy Church in Bristol. Would have been, I believe, the largest particular Baptist church in England in those days, certainly in Bristol. And they move there, and so he grows up in 2 different churches, the church in Henley, and then the church and the Pithy Church in Bristol, until he moves away in his late teens. He first goes to the Bristol Baptist Academy, which was kind of ground zero for particular Baptists. If you were going to train for the ministry, remember it's the 18th century, so no Baptists are going to be going to Oxford. Baptists aren't going to be going to Cambridge. They are in the line of descent. So they're not given access to the universities. So you have in the late 17th century, into the 18th century, you have developing what are often called dissenting academies. And these dissenting academies are found all over England and Wales. And so the Bristol Baptist Academy is one of the most developed. And that's a whole nother story. That's one of those tangents we could kind of get off on. But when Bedham goes there, it's somewhere around the 1730s. And like I say, he's probably in his late teens, early 20s during this time frame. He spends a few years at the Bristol Academy. And there he trains under a man by the name of Bernard Foskett. And Bernard Foskett is a longtime family friend. In Henley and in Bristol, Bernard Foskett lived with the Bedham family. He was a lifelong friend of John, Bedham's father. And Foskett and John, Bernard Foskett and John Bedham, served together at the church in Henley as co-pastors. Foskett is called away first. He's called away to the Broadmead Baptist Church, the Broadmead Church there in Bristol. And he's called away specifically to be the principal tutor of the Bristol Baptist Academy. And I believe Foskett gets there around 1719 or so. And John Bedham follows shortly thereafter, coming to pastor the Pithy Church. So after Benjamin spends a few years there under Foskett, there in the 1730s, he goes off to England. And there he studies, interestingly, under a man by the name of Eames. And I'm trying to find, I don't think I put Eames' first name in here. I just always think of him as Eames. John Eames. And John Eames was an Arminian, but he was an academic, a great intellectual. I think it's Isaac Watts who said of Eames that he was the most learned man I ever knew. So having someone like Watts say that about you, that's nice. So Eames is there teaching in London. And Bedham finds himself being tutored by Eames for at least a year. And while he is there in the London area, he joins the Goodman's Fields Church, pastored by Pastor Wilson. It's there that he is baptized. He had come to Christ a few years prior to that, back in the area of Bristol under his father's ministry, but he had not been baptized yet. So he's baptized there in London under Wilson. And they are the ones that eventually send him out in 1740 to pastor the church in Bourton-on-the-Water. And Bourton-on-the-Water is this beautiful little village town. I don't know if you've ever been there or seen pictures of it. It is a tourist trap. In the middle of the summer, that's when I went there in the June time frame. The streets are just packed with people. During the off season, it apparently gets much quieter. And a beautiful little creek, the Rush Creek, Windrush Creek, running through the middle of the village. And Bedham's house is right on the Windrush Creek. It's called the Manse. And you can actually go visit the manse. It's still standing today. But now it's, as all good Baptist pastors' homes, I suppose, should be, it's now a bar. So it's called the Bedham Bar. And it's also a restaurant, and it's like a bed and breakfast. You can stay there. And I actually looked it up on like an Airbnb type thing several years ago. You can stay there pretty cheap. But there's a long old bar in the place. And Jimmy, you were saying you went to Southern. I was working on my PhD at Southwestern at the time, and I had one of my friends take a picture of me standing at the bar, and I felt that I needed to like tell everybody that I didn't actually drink anything. But anyway, and I didn't. But so that's where he was in 1740, and he's there until he dies in 1795. He is there the first 3 years of his ministry. He is on what they would have called probation. You and I today, when we think of going to visit a church, we think of like a view of a call. You kind of go in for the weekend. They throw you in front of the youth group and in front of the old ladies group and in front of everybody other group they can possibly find that's influential in the church. And then they vote on you. And then you say, yes or no, I'm going to come. Well, he went with no thought that they would actually call him. He didn't know what was going to happen. And for 3 years, they watched him. And so they were not officially committed to him. He was not officially committed to them. But you can imagine they probably grew to love him as their pastor and thought of him that way. And then in 1743, they actually voted to call him as the pastor. He spends, like I say, the next 55 years of his life there, dies in 1795. There's a few other things we may get into as we kind of walk through some of the questions. But that's where he plants himself and raises his family and his wife, his children. Some of them die in infancy. Others of them live. but he is one of his fellow Baptists, when he was reflecting back on Bedham's ministry, referred to him being in Borton as being in village retirement. And he didn't mean by that he was like in an old folks home doing nothing. He meant that that's where he had just resigned to spend his life, in this village among these people. So that might give us a little bit there. And
Yeah. Thank you for that. And thank you for the biographical sketch on Bedham. And in your sketch, you mentioned Benjamin's father, John, and we're interested to learn a little bit about him. What influence did Benjamin's father, John, have on Benjamin and broader particular Baptist life? And who were some other influences on Benjamin? Who were his friends during his ministry?
Right. Well, we mentioned John and we mentioned Bernard Foskett. All right. So his dad and his father's lifelong friend, John and Bernard, or father and Bernard Foskett, were kind of like a Jonathan and David. I mean, they were just bosom friends, I suppose we can use that kind of term, lifelong brothers. And so I think really looking back on Bedham's life from my perspective, I would say that these two men were the most influential and formative on his life. At one point in time, we didn't mention this, but at one point in time, before Bedham went into the Bristol Academy, where he began to train for the ministry, Bedham was considering a career in medicine. And Bernard Foskett was an apothecary. And an apothecary is not really a term we use a lot today, but in the 18th century, an apothecary would have been basically the pharmacist and your doctor. All right. You would have gone to see him for, what's wrong with me. And maybe he would have just said, you have, a cold or whatever. Maybe he would have cut your leg off, because you have to have that done. And then he would send you to the apothecary, which would be the same guy, for the medicine to deal with, your cold or your newly amputated leg. So Foskett is an apothecary, and Bedham, remember, Foskett lives in the Bedham home. And so you can imagine, young Bedham is thinking in terms of training for the medical field. He has a resident doctor in the house that he can talk to about these kinds of things. So you can see conversations going on at the nighttime about medicine and dealing with people. But like Foskett, Bedham turns his attention to ministry. And so when you look at John Bedham and Bernard Foskett, in particular, you look at their ministry in Alchester, this little bitty town. The congregation also extends up to Henley, and it also extends down to a little bitty village called Bengeworth. And it meets in these three different locations over the course of the time that John and Bernard are pastoring. And during this time, John introduces some things to the church, along with Bernard, to the church there in Alchester, all right? So one thing they introduce is hymn singing. Well, this is very interesting in Baptist history, because if you think back to the 17th century, you have in the last decade of the 17th century, the great hymn singing controversy that goes on in the church between Benjamin Keach and Isaac Marlowe there in the London churches. Well, John Bedham, interestingly, is really Benjamin's connection or bridge to the 17th century particular Baptist tradition, because John Bedham is ordained to the ministry by none other than Benjamin Keach. So we go from Keach to John, now to Benjamin. All right. And though, for example, later on, John Bedham is not present at his son's ordination because he can't travel that far. His son is ordained there in London. And John can't make the trip from Bristol to London. But Bernard Foskett does. Bernard Foskett comes to give the charge to Bedham at his ordination in the 1740s. So they introduce hymn singing. They introduce confessionalism to the church in Alchester. It would have been very common for churches to write their own confessional statement. Now, the churches would have belonged to a larger association of churches. And so, for example, the Alchester Church there, John Bedham, they are connected there in the Midlands to the Midland Association. And the Midland Association, which was founded in 1655, probably during those days, I'm not sure, maybe it would have adopted the Somerset Confession or something like that. But in 1690, the Midland Association reforms itself on the basis of the Second London Confession. This is 1 year after the assembly meets in 1689. And so what's significant about that is that here's John and Bernard's church, it's a Second London church, it's a Second London confessional church, belongs to the Midland Association, but they also write their own confession for their own local congregation, which is exactly what Keach did back in London, has his own confession that ends up adding things, for example, like the laying on of hands or a paragraph or so about hymn singing and stuff that are later adopted in America in the Philadelphia Association. So hymn singing, confessionalism, also a strong commitment to associationalism. And so these things become very formative in Benjamin's life early on. And we find them repeated when Bedham comes to Bourton on the Water. I have on my shelf over here a facsimile copy of the Bourton on the Water church books that Bedham himself wrote. And church books are, they're just, what's the word I'm looking for? They're really important. That's a great word. If you're going to study about the history of a church, getting the church books will be invaluable. All right. So when I got my hands on those, it was interesting to see that the confession that Benjamin Bedham led the church in Bourton to adopt is almost word for word the confession from the Alchester Church that his father had promoted. But again, Bedham's there in Bourton on the Water. It is a Second London Church, Second London Confession Church, part of the Midland Association. But again, it adopts some specific confessional statements for its own life. And again, this would have been very common. John Gill does this in London, having his own confession of faith. And sometimes this practice of a church writing their own confession is used by some to say, well, see, they didn't hold to the Second London Confession. They held to this confession. And that's not a proper way, really, to understand what they're saying there. What they're saying is, like, for example, if you think of Keach is saying, I hold the Second London. I mean, he signs it. Maybe they also hold some other things, in particular for their own congregation. And so Bedham adopts this practice as well. Bedham's other friends, he has many ministerial acquaintances, all right? And I'll say it at the term of like the level of acquaintances. And some are going to be closer than others. But again, he's in a small village in the middle of nowhere, Jimmy, as we were mentioning, you know, where you're there in Missouri, all right? You know, they don't have the internet. They don't have Google. They don't have email or text or anything like that. What a wonderful life that would be. Of course, we couldn't be doing this. So as far as close friends, some of his closest friends are probably going to be men in his own congregation. His wife's father is a great supporter of him and a close confidant. There are men in the other churches. Again, John and Bernard remain lifelong friends, ministerial mentors until they pass away. He's very close to his father. Other men that you might know their names from that period, John Ryland Sr., John Ryland Jr., he would have known both these men, John Ash, Hugh and Caleb Evans are great influences and encouragements to him. Hugh and Caleb Evans are the tutors that follow Bernard Foskett at the Bristol Baptist Academy. So they got Foskett, then you got Hugh, and then you have Caleb. And the father-son duo of Hugh and Caleb Evans really helped to further along particular Baptist training, education, academic life, and they were very influential with Bedham as well. Benjamin Francis, John Sutcliffe, there's probably a name you're familiar with, John Sutcliffe, who pastored the Baptist Church in Olney, where John Newton was in Olney. John Sutcliffe was a good ministerial friend of Bedham. Bedham preaches at the ordination of Sutcliffe. And I have this later for us to talk about, but we can talk about it here. Bedham preaches at Sutcliffe's ordination, and John Newton is there. And John Newton hears Bedham preach. And John Newton is quite impressed with Bedham's preaching. So I have the quote that Bedham gives later on. Samuel Pierce, latter part of the 18th century, very influential in the formation of the Baptist Missionary Society, dies at a young age of about 33, isn't able to go overseas, wants to. William Carey, we need to talk about this later if we can. William Carey is the man that Bedham has in mind to replace him when he dies. So in like 1792, 93, somewhere like that, a few years before he dies, Bedham actually mentions this to Andrew Fuller in a letter that he writes, that William Carey is the one he wants to have come replace him. And Andrew Fuller also was a friend. So, excuse me. Lots of name dropping there, just different guys that are all kind of falling in line with what I would call the Bristol tradition, more of a strong evangelical strain of Calvinism within the particular Baptist community. He has associations more broadly as well. And interestingly, there is a minister by the name of Thomas Cole, who is the minister of the church in Gloucester, all right? Gloucester is there north of Bristol. But Thomas Cole, interestingly, in 1768, Benjamin Bedham's name is found on a sheet that is kind of a tribute to the ministry of Thomas Cole in Gloucester. And the reason this is significant is that it connects Bedham to men like George Whitfield. Because Thomas Cole, though the tribute isn't made for Cole until 1768, Cole dies in 1743. And meaning that Bedham would have known Cole prior to his death in 1743 and was also connected with George Whitfield during the days of the evangelical revival. And so there's a whole lot of stuff. I got several pages on that. We won't go into that. But it's really fascinating to see his connection with this group of evangelical ministers, one of whom is Mr. Evangelical Minister himself, George Whitfield. And Bedham would have been a young minister by that time. He would have been like in his mid-20s. Born in 1718. This is 1743 when Cole dies. He's early 20s. And he's already connected with George Whitfield. How close that connection was, it's difficult to determine. But Jeffrey Nuttall, who is a scholar in 18th century descent, connects all these men together as some type of frequent acquaintances in their ministry. So that's something about his friends and some of his connections that he has there.
So you mentioned earlier that Benjamin was a pastor of one church for a really, really long time. What do we know of Benjamin as a pastor, and what can we learn about and from Benjamin Bedham's or Bedham's pulpit ministry?
Benjamin Bedham's. Now he sounds like he's from the East now. And he's there for 55 years, which is just like unheard of today, isn't it? It's just like you don't find that. And I have a couple things to say later on just about Bedham as a pastor and the example he is. But if we can I focus for a minute on his preaching? This is what Bedham is known for. He has a reputation of being a preacher. I mean, he certainly has a reputation of being a pastor and being committed to these people for all these years of life. Think about all the people he must have married and counseled and buried and cared for. And I don't know where to stick this in, but it's just funny and it's fun to talk about. He's also a pastor committed to church discipline. All right. And there is this story. We'll talk about the preaching thing. There is this story, though, about a woman in the congregation in Borton that is put under church discipline. And for them, what this meant was she was barred from the table. She was not allowed to partake of the elements. All right. So she was allowed to come to church. And that's good. And there she was sitting in the service, listening to the sermon. And they come to the time of the Lord's Supper and they pass the bread. And the bread is going, like you might imagine, up and down the aisles, and they're trying to get it past the woman. The woman lunges across another pew or chairs. She just lunges, grabs the bread, and eats. And everybody's aghast. They're all like, oh, man, she got the bread. And then somebody screams, and I think it was Bedham, don't let her get the wine. And so that was just kind of a funny story. But he was committed to the discipline of the church. He certainly cared about this woman's soul. But this is in the church books. And so it's just kind of a funny thing to think about. But when you think about Bedham, the first thing I think of is he is a preacher. All right. We're going to mention resources later on that people might look at for Bedham. One of the things that is extant with Bedham is 8 volumes of sermons that are now kept in the Angus Library at Regent's Park College in Oxford. You can look most of these up online. You can find them on Google Books. They've been scanned. And Regent's Park, the Angus Library, is doing a good job of scanning a lot of difficult-to-access access things. The context of Bedham's preaching is the Bristol context. And when I say the Bristol context, I mean what we often call the Bristol tradition, which was a strong evangelical Calvinism reaching back to the 17th century and the founding of the first and second generation of particular Baptists. Often when we talk about the 18th century and particular Baptist life, it is kind of portrayed as these are just days where high Calvinism or hyper-Calvinism kind of ruled and reigned. And everything was kind of dormant and dead until, you know, as one of my friends said, Andrew Fuller rides in on a white horse and saves the day. All right. And so the more I read in the 18th century, there certainly was a presence of high Calvinism or hyper-Calvinism, whichever term you want to use. I use those somewhat interchangeably. They would have used the term high Calvinism on the day. That's kind of the way Fuller makes the distinction. There's like high Calvinism and a more strict Calvinism, which he finds is a more consistent Calvinism. But though that's true, and we do have the presence of high Calvinism in those days, there is also a strong strain of evangelical, even revival or mission-minded type Calvinism that is present in the 18th century. And I think more present than often it's given credit for. And, you know, back around the late 19th, early 20th century, the writings of men like W.T. Whitley, some Baptist historians of the day, I think there was a lot of caricature made of the 18th century because we really didn't have, at that point in time in the study of history, we didn't have access to primary documents like we do today. We're getting more access to primary texts so we can actually read what these men actually wrote rather than just what men wrote about them in secondary literature. So with that context in mind of evangelical Calvinism, Bedham fits well in that strain. He develops a great reputation amongst his fellow particular Baptists. there's a comment made by Robert Hall, who wrote about Bedham after he had died. And Robert Hall was the one that was kind of responsible for putting together and collecting Bedham's hymns. And he wrote about Bedham in the preface to the hymn publication. He says that as a preacher, Bedham was universally admired for the piety and unction of his sentiments, the felicity of his arrangement, and the purity, force, and simplicity of his language, all of which were recommended by a delivery perfectly natural and graceful. His printed discourses, taken from the manuscripts which he left behind him at his decease, are fair specimens of his usual performances in the pulpit. They are eminent for their qualities already mentioned and their merits, which the modesty of the author concealed from himself, have been justly appreciated by the religious public. And all that to say that Bedham was well regarded by men and by the churches as a preacher. He had a reputation in the association, the Midland Association, for his abilities as a preacher. He preached 17 times in the 46 years that he functioned there in the association, was able to attend the association from 1743 to 1789. We don't know. After 1789, he was not well in those days, and his attendance at the association became more sporadic. You are only allowed to preach once every 3 years by the associational policy. But if you count it up from 1743 to 1789, he preaches 17 times in 46 years. They apparently fudged a little bit with Bedham and gave him some other opportunities. His reputation as a preacher is known from Bristol to London, throughout the Midland Association, also the Abingdon Association. He was well respected. I think the most important thing about Bedham in his preaching is that he was a man who strove to preach the text of the Bible. So if we think of, you know, preaching as stories or preaching as theological preaching, though Bedham, I'm sure, told stories, and I'm sure Bedham had theology in his preaching, Bedham was what we would call a textual preacher. Now, he was not a biblicist. He was a confessionalist. He had a good, sound, robust, orthodox Reformed theology, but he was a textualist in his preaching. He would frequently, when you read through these sermons, he will frequently say, "Pay attention to my text." He'll like always calls it my text, and it's almost as if when you're reading it, it's like it's not Paul's anymore. You know, it's not James or Peter or Isaiah. It's just my. He like possesses the text. It's mine, and I'm going to tell it to you. I'm going to preach it to you. He had a wonderful speed with which he could develop a sermon in his mind, just because of his familiarity with the Bible. I think it's Bunyan we talk about? Was it Spurgeon who said, if you poke Bunyan, he bleeds Biblean, all right? Bedham was like this. There's a great story that John Rippon, who is a Baptist, a collector of all things Baptist in the 19th century, or the 18th century, and into the early 19th century. Rippon tells the story of a minister's meeting in Gloucestershire, the area north of Bristol, where Bedham is present. And after the public service began, Rippon says, his natural timidity, it seems, overcame his recollection. His text and his discourse, for he did not preach by notes, had left him. And in the way from the pew to the pulpit, he leaned his head over to a Reverend Mr. Davis and said, "Brother Davis, what must I preach from?" He forgot. He forgot his text. He forgot everything. And Brother Davis says to him, "Ask no foolish questions." Davis is like, "Well, that's a dumb thing to say. You know what you're supposed to preach from. Just go do it." Bedham thinks he's referring to Titus 3:9. Titus 3:9 says, "Avoid foolish questions." So Bedham gets up in the pulpit and in a methodical, correct, and useful way, preaches a sermon on Titus 3:9. We don't know what he was supposed to preach on, but he had forgotten. And So it's a wonderful tribute to his ability to preach. One thing you notice over and over in Bedham's preaching is his commitment to invite men to come to Christ, his commitment to the free offer of the gospel. One of the most fascinating stories of the 18th century is the development of what is known as the modern question. All right. Must men respond to the gospel if they hear the gospel preached? Must the non-elect, will they be held accountable for their refusal of the gospel? And the high Calvinist says, no, not the non-elect. But Bedham is committed to both the free offer of the gospel, that the church must preach the gospel to all people, and he is committed to the idea that all men who hear the gospel are held accountable for whether or not they respond. And so his one of my favorite sermons that he preaches is on that we will be fishers of men. And he talks about throwing the net of the gospel out to draw in the fish, to draw in the catch. But he resigns all things to the sovereign purpose of God and whether or not that's effective. But he says the minister must invite men. He must not just invite men, he must compel men and persuade men and command men to come. And so it's a wonderful thing hearing his commitment to the free offer of the gospel. There's a great line in one of his sermons, just to kind of give an example of this. He says, ministers were to use, Bedham says, all possible means for the conversion of the sinner and exert their utmost endeavors for this purpose, exhort the sinner to cry for his faith, pleading his mercy and their necessity, to call upon all men without exception to all that come under the sound of the gospel. And an example of this is in Matthew 9:21, he preaches on Christ, the physician of souls, and this is the close of the sermon. Everlasting arms are not long enough to reach and strong enough to save the soul that is dropping into hell. Everlasting arms are long enough to reach and strong enough to save the soul that is dropping into hell. Think, O thou distressed sinner. So now he's turning his attention on the listener. Think, O thou distressed sinner, thousands are now in heaven who were once as unlikely to have a place there as thou. Come then to Christ, cast thyself at his feet, and let thy disease be ever so malignant, inveterate, dangerous, or threatening, touch but his garment, the skirt, the hem of his garment, and thou shalt be whole. That's just one example of how he's pleading with men in every sermon to come and to believe on Christ. And so they're very encouraging sermons in that way.
Well, you've given us a little bit of insight now as to what we know of Bedham. We'll continue doing that throughout the podcast. Bedham as a pastor, we've now looked at, or more specifically as a preacher, but now we want to know what we know of Bedham as a hymn writer or as a catechizer.
Right. Well, this is a huge part of his life, and really, I don't think it's going to matter to him.
For additional content, check out our blog ministry at covenantconfessions.com. Also, keep up with our social media accounts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Next, head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Lastly, thank you for listening to the Covenant Podcast. Grace and peace to you.